You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heinbach, and we are here today on Tuesday, June 28th, and I'm joined by my co-host, Asmador, to be able to discuss something that needs to be brought up into the public attention. It's been something that's been discussed extensively with its impact in Europe, but specifically here in the United States, we need to be able to talk about what is the real impact of so-called refugee resettlement. When you're taking people from a foreign culture, a foreign religion, with a foreign ethnicity, with absolutely no checks on who they are, no checks on any of their criminal history or things like that, and basically set loose within random communities, the real impact it can have. And I think we're going to start today by discussing, it's gotten some track in the alternative media. Daily Stormer did an article about it, and we've been talking about it for a while, but about the violent rape of a 5-year-old white girl in Idaho by these so-called refugees. So first of all, Asmador, it's not a very fun topic, but it's one that needs to be discussed. So we'll start off with the pleasantries. First of all, how are you doing today? And second of all, tell me a little bit about what you're thinking about all this.
Well, I'm doing great today. First of all, I'd like to congratulate you and all your guys for the awesome Battle of Sacramento you had the other day. That was great. But I've been following this for some time. The 5-year-old and all being raped and urinated on by the refugee children. And there's nothing unusual about that, except maybe some of the details about where it happened and the various, you know, sundries of the disgusting act itself. But, you know, there are groups around the country that try to track this stuff because we don't, you know, in America, we're so spread out that it doesn't really spread by word of mouth the way it does across, you know, little European and English villages and stuff, to where eventually enough people are saying, yeah, it happened to my daughter too, that it blows up like it did in Rotherham. Here, you know, we have it cloaked in all these different categories and 50 different states and all these different jurisdictions and so many ways that they make it hard to find out the citizenship and ethnicity. But there's a group in North Carolina, and, you know, North Carolina is not like one of the bigger states. And in fiscal year 2014, they were able to nail down for it, just in North Carolina, 1,400 children that had been molested just by illegal immigrants from Mexico. And, you know, we have this just a massive wave of violent crime going on with these illegals here. And amazingly enough, a huge portion of our society wants to deny it. You know, it's always the old Naxalt thing. It's not all Muslims and not all Mexicans and all that. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's really a clash within our society, and I think you bring up a very good point. You know, as I always love to tell people about the differences between Europe and America, I always go back to when I was in the Czech Republic, and you know, our great comrades in the Czech Workers' Party, absolutely amazing men and women, the most dedicated, some of the most dedicated I've ever met, and just absolutely great folks. But they were going to have me go give a speech. We were in Prague, and they were going to be going to Brno. And they were like, you know, oh, we're so sorry, we have to drive across the country. And I was prepared. I was like, all right, I'm about to spend like 8 hours in the car. Like, let's do this. And they were like, it's going to be about 3 hours. And I was like, oh, goodness gracious, that's a completely different context to what we're used to within the United States when it comes to distance. Because I can't even be from where I'm sitting now at the end of Kentucky. I can't even be to North Ohio right next door in 3 hours. So distance, I think you may bring up a really good point where it's very easy for the system to kind of play a shell game, which is what they do with crimes, whether it's you know, crimes against whites, you know, by the black population, by illegal immigrants, or by these refugees. They can really play a very intricate shell game with keeping the media really contained, or diluting the story with a new thing about what Jennifer Lopez or Kim Kardashian tweeted or put on their Instagram. They can do a really good job due to the size and scope of our nation. I mean, one of the biggest nations on the face of the planet, of being able to hide these different crimes and to be able to ignore a lot of things, because the mainstream media kind of has some talking points that they go on and they'll repeat ad nauseum. But real news that really has an impact on individuals, families, and communities can just be brushed aside. I mean, as kind of a side different than what we're talking about right now, is the real lack of media coverage about the fact that West Virginia is suffering the worst floods it's had in 100 years. Over 30 people have died. Hundreds of homes have been destroyed. Huge impact. But, of course, no one cares about poor white people, whether we're the victims of natural disasters or the victims of globalist policies. So it's very easy for them to play this shell game.
Well, yeah. And you know, they'd probably really like to see the poor Appalachian people gone anyway, because they're always used as the rhetorical counterpoint when people try to claim that high crime statistics correlate to bad economic conditions. And everyone's always able to point to the whites in Appalachia and say, well, you know, they're actually poorer than these other segments of society that you're talking about. We don't see those high crime rates there.
Well, exactly. You've got a homogenous population, overwhelmingly, that has high community trust. I mean, these are families that in many cases have lived next to each other, intermarried, and been able to be part of an organic community for centuries now. They're real communities. I mean, when I've been in Appalachia, you know, people instantly look at me and notice my accent, know that I don't have a last name they recognize, and they know I'm not from around there. And that's actually a great thing. That means they're so connected with their neighbors and the goings-on within their town. They're connected to this real organic nature of what a society is supposed to be. So, no, you're totally right. When it comes to the crime rate, when it comes to every sort of multicultural talking point, Appalachia really disproves that there is a racial component to these things. It's not just about poverty. It's not just about, you know, it's 2016 and this is how it is. That Appalachia, for all of its poverty, is one of those, you know, there's a difference between happiness and joy. You know, you read the words of the saints and they talk about that difference. You know, happiness is fleeting, but joy is your family. Joy is your community. Joy is your you know, your church relationships. And that's what it's really about. And Appalachia is probably the most joyous place I've ever been able to spend time in America, because of how interconnected these families are and how reliant they are on one another, because no one has enough money. So families help one another. They help one another watch their kids. They help one another when their neighbors are on hard times. I mean, it really is an example of what a white community should be. And of course, all the globalist policies, as we covered in the first edition of Action, our party paper on, and I had Eric Stryker on the show a few weeks ago to discuss that the Jews and the big pharmaceutical companies have made billions of dollars trying to pump drugs and highly addictive synthetic heroin into these communities, and all the poverty, the globalist policies, shutting down the factories, shutting down the mines, shutting down everything to try and starve out the people of Appalachia. But this is a people that's a community. It's like how any nation can survive as long as the nation remains. As long as the people remain, they can get through any hardship. And they're some of the hardiest people I know. But it just goes to show about what strength community can bring you, what strength a sense of nationalism and ethnic identity can bring. And I think you're right. That's probably why the system wishes that floods would come and wash away all of Appalachia, because they, as Bernie Sanders says, of course, there's no white people in poverty. And Appalachia is a really big blow to anything that the system has established for their positions.
Well, yeah. And, you know, to bring it back to the point we started with, you know, that sense of a family and community and nation and all that you're talking about really prevents a lot of the things that, you know, the problems that we're going to be discussing today, because, you know, Jared Taylor has been making the point for, I don't know, 10, 20 years, that if we didn't have all this diversity and multiculturalism in our country, that it would be a lot harder to do things like terrorist attacks. Because when you, some Muslim from somewhere in the Middle East is moving around in your society, people would be more leery of him. They'd notice him and notice everything he's doing. But we've had this multicult for half a century now that's, you know, been celebrated and promoted and gets worse every day. And when you lose all the trust, you also, the famous hunkering down effect that multiculturalism brings to neighborhoods and towns. When you lose that trust and you do your hunkering down, one of the first thing you do is you avert your eyes, you know, because it's best just to not notice things and don't pay attention and all like that. And as long as it's the other guy, lucky me. And, that's basically what we've got going now. We have such a multicultural society that, they've got the lines really blurred. There's no way to look around and go, okay, this guy belongs here and this guy doesn't. And this guy's probably legal and this guy's probably not. All these things are very gray now.
Well, exactly. And it kind of draws into what we're talking about in the first section with the refugee resettlement. It's just another policy of demographic displacement, demographic destruction, where it's bringing low trust societies instead of high trust societies, because there is no homogenous ethnicity, a single language, a single faith, a single set of customs. These people that can go from the third world that have entirely different standards, entirely different rules, entirely different laws that they grew up with, an entirely different just view of how society should be organized are being transplanted, and it's being accepted in many ways. Because of, from the 1965 Immigration Reform Act on, we've been breaking down homogenous communities. We've been blockbusting white neighborhoods. We've been destroying white communities and forcing ever more white flight. It just goes to show, I think, that these attacks, the blood is really on the hands of these politicians, that the lives that have been ruined, the lives that have been lost. It truly is a tragedy to see what's happening to these communities going from high trust to low trust. Because even people that have the same ethnicity or, like you said, get a bunker mentality. And it really starts to fray the very nature of the fabric that binds together a society. And we're seeing this all over. I mean, and in Idaho, of all places, the idea that these supposed refugees were able to rape a five-year-old and urinate on her and debase her and attack her in all these horrific ways. And the fact that there's not marching in the streets right now just goes to show me about how multiculturalism is breaking apart the fabric of society. Like you said, people are just trying to keep their heads down because whites are under the gun pretty much everywhere.
Well, yeah, but now as far as the reaction of the white people there in the town, they are upset about this. And there's a video in a lot of the original news reports about the story. It's video from the, I guess, the first town hall meeting they had after it, or maybe they called a special one for it or something. And, the whole place is just, it's all white people. The town hall's packed and they're all raising Cain about it. They're saying, but they have to speak in code. They're all normies and they have to speak in code. They won't come right out and say what it is. There's this one woman who pats her chest and she says, "I'm an American. I'm a real American. I was born here." And what's implicitly being implied there, that people should just go ahead and embrace and say, I think, and start holding their politicians' feet to the fire on the racial question. They say, "Look, I'm a white person. Why are these people being forced into our town, in our neighborhood? Why is it okay for them to come and rape white kids?" One of the more interesting things in the video is that even after all these angry people are saying, in code, they're speaking up like that, then you have this one guy stand up who I suspect is the editor of that town's paper or something. And he says, "Not all Muslims are like that." He actually, those exact words. And everybody, they're not educated or used to all this cultural Marxist speak or how to respond to it. And they all just sit there and, I guess not all Muslims are like that. And it totally derails the whole thing. But it's gotten so ridiculous. Like you said, the thing is falling apart and everybody is getting sick of it. And so now the weird talking points that they have to go to try to misdirect you from what's going on. The police chief, when he gave his statement, the whole thing was, well, there have been a lot of rumors online and here in town that these children are from Syria. They're not from Syria. Well, it turns out one of them's from Iraq and one of them's from New Guinea or Somalia, somewhere like that, that the black Muslims come from. And I'm sitting there thinking, who cares whether they're from this part of the Middle East or that part of the Middle East? Nobody in that town cares. The fact of the matter is, these are a bunch of these so-called refugees that we unleash on our communities, and they immediately begin victimizing our children.
Right. There's a real cost to all this, and that's what people need to realize. When we talk about the impact of demographic displacement, it isn't just about the fact we're becoming a minority, which, of course, is a big issue that we need to be talking about. This has real implications for families. I mean, this little five-year-old girl, I mean, you know, we should keep her in our prayers for a very long time, because this is something that might have put her on her path at 5 years old that psychologically could ruin her for the rest of her life. And just think about what her family is going through. Think about what her friends are going through. I mean, just knowing this. And she might never be able to psychologically recover from this trauma. I mean, this was a rape put in with all these other sorts of just horrific and sadistic tortures. And we just need to be able to see that there's a real cost to this. Every time an illegal immigrant kills someone in a traffic accident or commits a crime or murders somebody, every time a refugee, robs a liquor store and shoots the clerk who's just trying to put himself through college, or, you know, a million and one different other things, this has a real human cost. And it's very easy for the media to try and hide this in spreadsheets and numbers and take the human aspect out of it. But the tears of a five-year-old girl who was raped and humiliated, that is what we're talking about. We're talking about the woman that gets beaten, raped, and killed in her home by illegal immigrants. We're talking about all of the crime that multiculturalism brings. Every single one of these victims, the blood is on the hands of our politicians. There is a human component of this that cannot be ignored. And these are our mothers, these are our sisters, and our daughters, and our brothers, and our fathers that are under attack. This is our family that is literally being murdered and raped in front of our very eyes, and our politicians are bringing in more people to commit these crimes. That this is something where the political class is waging not just a demographic war, but a war of violence, of sexual assaults. I mean, everything, as we saw in Cologne, for instance. I mean, the Angela Merkel has to answer for the fact that her refugee policies are the reason why women got raped, why men were beaten, why women were sexually assaulted. The same goes in all these European countries taking in refugees, that these politicians are the ones that brought them here. They need to be the ones held accountable for them. You know, it's like co-signing on a loan almost. You know, if I co-sign on someone's loan and that person doesn't pay, well, guess what? I've got to pay. And you know what? These politicians said, there won't be any crime. There won't be any problems. These people are gonna come and assimilate, which of course they can't. First and foremost, they can't do it. But second of all, they're the ones that said there wouldn't be any crime. Our brothers and sisters wouldn't be suffering because of this, and they are. So they need to be held accountable for the fact that the blood is on their hands.
Well, yeah, here's something that the American people really need to think about. You know, we still have, especially compared to Europe, we still have a very tiny percentage of our minority population is Muslim from the Middle East. And if in the tiny numbers that they exist in our population at this time, if they're willing to go out and do the kind of things that we see them doing when the media will actually report that they're doing it, just imagine what it's going to be like when some of our cities are 20, 30, 40% Muslim. I was watching this video last night, and it's in Denmark, and apparently it's like these high school kids graduating, and they're on a bus heading to either the graduation or an after graduation event or whatever. It's broad daylight. They're driving up a city street, and suddenly, I mean, it looks like some kind of war has broken out. All these Muslims just start flooding into the street. They even have a car to pull in front of the bus to try to stop it. And they start trying to get to the bus and to the kids. I mean, it's just amazing the things that they'll do when they get a certain percentage in the population. And like I said, they're probably, I think the last percentage I read, it was something like they're 3% of the American population already is all they are. And everywhere you look that they have a Muslim community, this stuff's going on. I mean, Minnesota is turning in, which has always been one of the safest, most boring places in the United States, is now becoming a rape capital. And then we see what just happened in Idaho. It's just like the white rabbit. People always say diversity means chasing down the last white person. And that's what they're doing with this program that they've got to send all these refugees to our neighborhoods.
Well, exactly. And, you know, you hit on a good thing where, you know, resistance to this has to be growing because it's so out of control. I want to get your thoughts. I'm just reading breaking news from Germany, which is always a great thing to see. And I want to just read a little bit of the article and then get your thoughts. Pardon me. German President Joachim Gauck was booed and attacked by droves of people at a celebration of the 116th German Hiking Day in Sebnitz, Saxony. The people reportedly shouted, "Traitor, get out. We don't want Stasi pigs, and we are the people." One man carrying his young son on his shoulders appears to have spit on him while exclaiming insults. Other citizens were heard saying, "You killed our children, and what have you done to us?" They were blocked by police in riot gear, to whom they said, "You're protecting warmongers. Shame on you." The situation escalated and the riot police were forced to use pepper spray. Official German state TV and state radio reports are that a handful of right-wing extremists have attacked the president and disturbed the otherwise peaceful and welcoming reception of the president. This is simply not the case as seen in the video. Heiko Maas, the German justice minister, called the attackers cowards who insult the president because of their personal frustration. He himself was booed off the stage as a traitor by hundreds of Germans at the annual Labor Day celebration on the 1st of May. He said that they will be prosecuted immediately, as it cannot be allowed that such a tiny minority has influence in the political climate of Germany. So, you know, when it comes to this, as we've mentioned, the Germans, you know, the Czechs, the Austrians, the French, everyone is dealing with this massive influx because all of our globalist politicians are doing the exact same thing in every single European country. But an example of the German president being booed off the stage and having to be protected by lines of riot cops against normal German citizens who are just tired of the rapes. They're tired of the sexual assaults. They're tired of the robberies. They're tired of being second-class citizens in the nation that their ancestors built and fought and died for. So it's an encouraging thing to see out of Europe. So I kind of want to see, what are your thoughts just initially on the German issue, and then how that might translate here in the United States? Because you mentioned that that city council meeting where there were so many angry people standing up against the abuses that, that our children are facing. So I want to know your thoughts on that, Asmodor.
Well, I have a few. I'm familiar with the story. And if you watch the video that is in that story, you know, everything they're saying about that crowd is a lie. I mean, they're talking about some tiny minority. And I didn't see any stage part in the video. I guess that was before, but it was like some kind of a parade. They were all walking up the street. And all these downtown streets were just covered. It looked like every white German left in Germany was there, and they were angry. And they were crowding right up around this president, you know, and the police were, you know, dressed up in their riot gear with their helmets and shoulder pads and everything, trying to keep them off. And you got to remember, this is the guy who recently said that the problems in Europe right now are not the fault of the elites. The problem is the people. I mean, that's his words that he said to the media. And when they say the problem is the people, they're not talking about all these ones who are, you know, riding in on the inflatable boats and everything. They're talking about the German people. And yeah, the Germans, I think they're finally trying to shake off this stuff that's been going on. I mean, 50 years of anti-German propaganda, 50 years of teaching them that their fathers and grandfathers are outlaws and criminals and murderers and all that stuff, and 50 years of just bleeding them dry over some ridiculous thing that never really even happened. I think they're just about sick of it.
Well, you know, it's like I would really hate reparations being taken out of my check about for being cruel to the orcs at the Battle of Helm's Deep. You know, it's like right. You're right. Like the Germans, their entire national identity has been under attack, and they're being told that they have to they have to be demographically displaced and pay for it while they're doing it, and do it with a smile on their face. After being accused of stuff that literally just did not happen, is as mythical as the universe created by J.R.R. Tolkien in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. It's just absolutely insane. You know, I saw it when I was in Germany a few months ago about how it seems like your average Germans are just waking up. I mean, because most of them spoke German in Berlin that I was able to talk to, and even Berlin, which is supposedly a very left-wing city, when they found out I was an American, They were talking about Trump. They were talking about being anti-globalist. They were talking about being anti-immigration. And, you know, everyone says, like, you know, the political class is corrupt. They're trying to get rid of us. They're trying to displace us. I mean, this is something that your average German understands, and increasingly the average American. You know, the thing that we always talk about, you know, the Germans waking up, it's tragic it's taken so long in America, but I think it's also because of the size. But demographically, Germany is in a much superior position than America is. I mean, we're close to minority status in the next generation, and Germany is still over 80% white, and we're over 20 points less than that. Because, of course, in the U.S. Census, most Arabs are counted as white, and other groups that aren't actually European are counted as white. So the numbers of us are inflated, and the number of legal immigrants and non-whites are underreported. So if you think about that,
absolutely,
we really need to get our head in the game. I mean, the idea of Barack Obama or a Republican politician, because of course the Republicans and the Democrats are just as bad as any as either side. You know, they're all supporting these policies of mass immigration, of capitalist exploitation of the working class, of just everything to destroy us. Both sides are just as bad. I mean, could you even imagine hundreds of Americans coming out and shouting? I mean, we're so far behind. We're catching up. We're organizing. We're going to win this fight. But it is great to see the Germans who are standing up, because it needs to happen. But in America, we need to realize that, you know, in the distance, where many whites are isolated in white flight areas or in areas that are too poor for the non-whites to be resettled, because there's no welfare for the people there anyway, let alone new people. But these demographic changes are happening so quickly and so severely. White Americans need to start realizing how bad the situation really is and join our European brothers and sisters in rising up against this and against the corrupt political class, because we're being replaced at a faster rate than even the Europeans are.
Yeah, and I think white Americans are waking up. We're in a phase where, you know, we're like one or two cycles behind Europe about this. And I think the reason that it's blowing up in Germany faster than it did here is because, you know, here this stuff has happened so slowly. I mean, it's been going on since 1965. But, you know, this massive influx that Germany has seen and most of Europe. And I mean, I know like in the UK, it's been going on a lot longer than that. But this migrant invasion, you know, just really started off in 2014, and it escalated in early 2015 with the boat people and all. And now we're seeing, like you brought up, things like the cologne rapes. And it turns out, you know, they tried to hide the cologne rapes for 5 days, and it boiled to the surface because of all the people who'd taken video of it and all the people who had seen it. And then it turns out, as time goes on, it's not just cologne. Boy, it's every little town in Germany, and then you start hearing about it. It's all these towns in Australia and stuff. And remember, they just had this thing in Austria where a Muslim migrant refugee raped a 9-year-old boy, I believe 9 years old, at the swimming pool while the swimming pool was open. And then when they arrested him, they, you know, he said, "It's not my fault. I had a sexual emergency." And
Fiki can't wait.
Right. No. Yeah. Fiki must go on. But can you imagine a sexual emergency? And it's weird the way the left bends over backwards to accommodate all this stuff, because, you know, the thing with the feminist camp of the left is always rape, 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 rape. I mean, if we sit down on a bus as men and we don't have our knees together, they call that, you know, it's manspreading, and it's a form of implicit rape, they say. And I could go on and on with the craziness they do against us about rape. But then when you import all these non-white men into your country and they start actually raping wholesale and gang raping out in public and everything, then you see these ads like came out. I believe this came out in Germany after the Cologne thing, where it says, you know, rape only lasts 15 minutes, but being a poor whatever in a third world country lasts a lifetime. Open the borders. You know, I mean, seriously, as long as it's not a white person doing it, rape's not a big deal. And we've got to get a handle on this stuff. This lunatic left that puts this stuff out there, they have, it seems like they have the only access to the media, the only access to politicians where they'll get an approving response. They say, "Oh yes, everybody's the same. Let them all in." And, we're not the same. I mean, I know I sound like a broken record, but it's the thing we have to keep pounding in here. When you import these groups that have a different culture and a different religion and a different race and all that, that is just incompatible with your society. The soil is not magic. It's not going to turn them into Americans. The Constitution is not some holy script that's going to cause them to have some revelation about liberty and other people's rights and all that. No, that's not what they're coming here for. They're coming here to colonize us, and they're not even having to come armed as an armed force. They come with their hands out explicitly to colonize us through mass immigration and high birth rates.
Yeah, we pay them to do it, and that's where people need to really see and understand. I mean, you're right about the radical feminists. I mean, it's hilarious the Orwellian doublethink that they engage in when it comes to. I mean, you know, when you've got people that are saying Sharia will dominate the UK, every woman's got to be in a burqa. The feminists are cheering for more Muslim immigration, or fighting to support hate preachers like Anjem Chowdhury being allowed to preach their message. But nationalists simply saying, we support our nation, our culture. They're the bad guys, which goes to show that all of the Hydra heads of the organized left have nothing to do actually with their ideology. They use the Jews and the globalists use useful idiots on a variety of different fronts, whether it's the feminists to attack men, or any of these other institutions. It all boils down to one thing. White people have to go. European culture must be destroyed, and we must be displaced. Every one of their policies is based around destroying the white race and destroying our political control over our nations that our ancestors gave to us. So once we understand that, it becomes a heck of a lot easier. It's not about debating third wave feminist policy. It's not about debating about refugee differences. When you realize all the government policies are built on displacing us and destroying us, then we can really identify the enemy, because the same enemy is behind every one of these movements. The same enemy was behind the civil rights movement, feminism, pushing for abortion, the homosexual movement. It's the same Jews who are doing it. It's the same Jews, like I mentioned, in Appalachia, trying to push our people into getting addicted to synthetic heroin when they think they're getting medicine. It's these same Jews that are behind it. So once we identify their plan and identify the players, all the these little details of the different Hydra heads are important. St. George needs to be able to stab the dragon in its heart. Not try and lop off some Hydra heads. So, Asimov, we're coming to the end of our show. Can you give me a final thought for the day going in about what we've talked about to leave our listeners with?
Well, yeah, you better protect your community, because if it hasn't come to you yet, they have plans to bring it to you.
I agree. There's no way to opt out of this system and just keep your head down. The fight's coming to all of us. That's why we need to stand and organize together. So, Asimov, thank you so much for being with me today. Thank you to all my listeners. And I'll look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow, same time, same place. So I'll talk to you tomorrow. Hail victory!
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.